Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show, or for Friday night, end of the week. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. It has been a rough week. It continues to be a very, very dark time out there. Just to get the show off on a good start, of course, our phone number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. The phone lines are open. Donovan is sitting there in the control room, his hand poised over that telephone receiver to grab it the moment you press those buttons, call in, and ring that phone there. The webcam is functioning, and the chat page at whatreallyhappened.com is also open if you want to feed information to us that way. Now, getting right out the start, the Dow was just all over the place today. As low as 72.51 was the low point of the day. Remember yesterday I said by March it'll be in the 6,000s? I'm holding to that prediction right now, and we're sure getting close there today, but it rebounded a little bit, then came back down again. For the whole day, down 100. We're seeing it just step down, step down, step down. I think the plunge protection team is basically trying to prevent a single big day crash, which would then basically announce, yes, we're in a depression, much as the crash of 1929. Signal the beginning of that depression. And it is so eerie to be watching this happen around here, because years and years ago, when I was still an actor, I got to play a bit part in the TV movie version of Day the Bubble Burst, and it was kind of fun being on that set recreating the New York Stock Exchange when it all came apart. It's one of the fun things about being in show business. You get to see cool things, and you get to sort of play with history, and it's really a lot of fun. And then all of a sudden, we're living through what appears to be a repeat of that history, and it gets a little bit scary. So anyway, the news is just bad all over. It is looking like Citi Group may be nationalized or taken over. Right now, the stock in the New York Times costs less than a copy of the Sunday paper. That's how bad it is getting for them. General Motors shares have hit a 70-year low. Berkshire stock hit a 5-year low today. Wells Fargo is showing signs of being in trouble as well. And it's just crazy out there. Before we get any further, it's just they're out there trying to figure out some way they can grab the money. It's like musical chairs. They're all grabbing the money from each other. New York, I am not kidding you on this one. This story just came across the wire. New York is going to tax you if you file your state taxes using paper forms. I'm not kidding you. It's not bad enough that you are paying the taxes, which are excessive. If you file your tax forms using the paper forms instead of the electronic filing, they're going to tax you more for that. It's taxes on the taxes, on the taxes, on the taxes, on the taxes. Now, the most troubling story, we've been seeing this ramp up over the last week. It began with the White House essentially dismissing the National Security Intelligence estimate on Iran that came out at the end of 2007, basically saying that Iran is not building nuclear weapons. This was the unanimous opinion of all 16 of the United States intelligence agencies. Iran is not building nuclear weapons. They are not enriching uranium beyond the level required for a nuclear power plant. Now, the propagandists who are out there that are continually trying to blur this whole issue about enrichment as if uranium enrichment is automatically a guarantee of ill intent. That is, of course, nonsense. Under the terms of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which Iran and the United States has signed, and by that signature, the United States recognizes Iran's right to build power stations and to make the fuel rods for them. Now, the uranium that is enriched for fuel rods is enriched to 3 to 5% concentration. That is a far, far cry from weapons-grade uranium. It's not like a blender where you go from chop to puree. It is a whole orders of magnitude. More plumbing is required, and it's very, very obvious if somebody is setting up their centrifuge cascades to try and create weapons-grade material versus power station-grade material. Now, today we were seeing all over the newspapers that Iran has enough uranium to build a bomb. Yeah, as long as you're ignoring the fact that it is currently sitting as uranium hexafluoride, being, you know, waiting to be made into reactor power station fuel rods. It's not like it's sitting there in a chunk where all they have to do is put it in a case and they've got a bomb. They're still looking at the requirement of enriching from 3% all the way up to 95%, which is what it takes to make a bomb. And, you know, basically what they're saying, they're making the same specious claim if it was just sitting in dump trucks as uranium ore or yellow cake, and you have enough, yeah, there's enough there to build a bomb, but you're a long ways away from making a bomb. And the part that really worries me, we came out with a story today. White House says world can't delay on Iran. Barack Obama is playing the same sneaky trick with Iran that George Bush pulled with Iraq. They're waving nuclear weapons or the threat of nuclear weapons. They're trying to they're not actually coming out and saying Iran has nuclear weapons because it's too easy to come back and say, okay, prove it. But they're trying to basically sell you on this idea that from power station to nuclear weapons is a simple step. And it isn't. Not even for Israel, who actually did it underneath the Dimona reactor. They've had all kinds of technical problems down there. Their system is leaking radioactive water into the surrounding area. It's just becoming this dead zone where, you know, nobody dares go in and grow any crops anymore because, you know, the vegetables will eat you for dinner. And it's not trivial, but they're trying to sell you this idea that because Iran is building a power station, that automatically makes it a threat. And what's going on is very simple. The United States went into a depression in 1904, and it dragged itself out by getting into World War I. The United States was in the Great Depression following the crash of 29 and all through the 30s, and it got out by getting into World War II. So here our economy is already in. They're already saying it is a new depression. So what are they doing? They're trying as hard as they can to get a new world war going. They're going to fix their mistakes by sending your kids off to get killed in the millions. That is what they're trying to do. Right now, the American people are very angry with their government. It's hardly unique. You know, we're seeing in Iceland and Greece and France and Italy, the people are starting to protest and riot because they see the government is responsible for their economic difficulties. And so the thinking in Washington, D.C. is that if they can start a war, that we'll all line up like obedient little Americans and we'll salute that flag and we'll say, yes, take our money. We'll starve gladly because now it's a war and our country's life is at stake. Here, take our children, send them to white-hot flaming deaths. And we'll just salute the flag while you do it and sing God Bless America. That's what they're thinking. They really think that if they can step up this war, if they can create a whole new regional war, that we'll forget all about the lies that got us into Iraq, we'll forget all about the lies that got us into Afghanistan, we'll forget all about the tax credits that sent our jobs over to other countries that triggered this financial crash, and we'll say, yes, we'll put up with the hardship because now it's a war, and we will always stand behind our government during times of war. I don't think so. It's not going to work. The population is now aware that this is the thinking that has got us into the last two world wars. And they're certainly looking out for it, justifying getting into a new one. And it will be a world war, because Russia is definitely siding with Iran. If we attack Iran, or if Israel attacks Iran and drags us into this conflict, we will be at war with Russia. And folks, Russia really does have nuclear weapons, and they do have delivery systems. And this is a path of insanity. But our government is on this path because they can't think of anything else to do. And that is the real danger. They see global war and millions of dead people as their best choice right now. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm looking at the chat window from whatreallyhappened.com, and I'm already seeing comments. It used to be our leaders led us into battle. Now they sit on the sidelines. That's true. In historical times, the kings would lead their troops right into battle. Alexander the Great suffered grievous injuries leading his own troops into battle. Another comment, if they want war, I say they'd be the first ones deployed. I would agree, because when leaders carry that risk, they're going to be more cautious about doing wars. When you have war that is as disconnected between the leaders and those who fight it as we do now, yeah, it becomes very easy to commit the nation to war, to a foreign adventurism. I think Eisenhower was the last president we had that had actually led troops in a major war, and look how hard he fought against the military-industrial complex as president. He was trying to pull us back from that brink of being a permanent militarist society, and sadly, he failed. And ever since then, half of all of our taxes go to building bombs and building weapons. We spend more on the instruments of death and destruction than virtually the rest of the world put together. And we still can't really gain any ground in Afghanistan, which I think tells you a very great deal about how inefficient our spending is. In fact, that reminds me, on whatreallyhappened.com earlier today, I put up this wonderful video clip from a movie called The Pentagon Wars. It was directed by Richard Benjamin, and based on the real experiences of a Colonel Burton, who was at the Pentagon during the development cycle of the Bradley Infantry Fighting Vehicle, and just showed how ridiculous the military procurement system is. It's just a racket for extracting billions, trillions of dollars from the American taxpayers and just playing with it and having fun. And I had direct experience with this for a while. Years ago, I was with NASA, and then after I transitioned to working in the film industry, believe it or not, I was working for a film visual effects company. We got hired by a defense contractor to help them create a presentation for the U.S. Congress about their particular proposal for the Strategic Defense Initiative, and I can't go into details about what that was all about, except that it was such a difference, because when you're working in movies or TV, you know, the money's very, very tight. Oh, you know, $100 here, $100 there, it's like the end of the world. This defense contractor, they had money, it was like having a fire hose. If your normal business is drinking water from a tap or a water fountain, these guys had fire hoses lined up. The money was, it was just incredible. A whole different way of thinking about money, a whole different degree of spending. It was obscene is the word. You know, when I look out on the streets and I see homeless people, you know, sleeping in the alleys and eating out of trash cans, and I think about how much money goes into this monster, this military monster. And, you know, one of the reasons they want to ban guns is they keep saying, well, if you have all these guns around, sooner or later somebody's going to use them. Well, the same thing is true about weapons of war. We spend all this money to build up all these weapons of war, and we reach a point where we say, don't we have enough of these? And sure enough, the military will come up with a war someplace so they can burn it all up, and then come back and they say, well, golly, our defense is weak now, and we've got to build new weapons, we've got to buy new bullets. We saw this during Vietnam. All Vietnam was about was grinding up those helicopters and those jeeps and those vehicles. You know, all of our dead American kids, that was just a side effect. But the purpose was to grind up all this war munitions to justify taxing the American people to replace it all with newer stuff. Now, we were hearing just earlier today, they're saying, well, these ongoing dragged-out wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, we've drawn down our preparedness. If we're going to be looking at Iran, we've got to start spending money on new weapons and new bullets and new things like that. We, as a nation, we've got this addiction to war and violence. And it is not only destroying our nation, it's making a graveyard of large sections of the rest of the world. And I think as we head into the third millennium, we need to pull back on that, because a huge amount of this incredible debt that we're all struggling to deal with is directly attributable to the reckless spending on war and weapons that our government seems unable to get away from. And we definitely need to deal with that reality. We are a military dictatorship, because even as we are on the edge of financial collapse, we can't say no to the Pentagon. They're just taking more and more and more money, and they're spending it on these weapon systems, a lot of which don't really work. We've all heard about the tests of the new ABM system. They have to put a homing beacon in the target before it'll actually hit. That's a courtesy our enemies, I don't think, are likely to accord us if they ever were to really attack us. I don't think they will. And this gets back to this whole push for a war in Iran. Why are we invading Iran? My parents' generation, and we're still making the payments, but my parents' generation spent trillions of dollars, $5 trillion, to build a nuclear deterrent, the purpose of which, all this money was spent, that it would protect us from ever being attacked by the Russians. We had missiles in silos. We had bombs in the air. We had airplanes flying constantly at their fail-safe points. I know they don't do that anymore. We have all these submarines cruising around with all these missiles in them, with the multiple warheads. World War II in a can. Just one of these Ohio-class or Trident-class submarines can destroy most nations. And it's still not enough. They want space-based weapons, and they want all these new toys, and it just goes on and on. And it's a hideous waste of money, because all this money is being spent. We don't get anything back for it. The stuff sits there. In fact, I'm looking at a comment in the chat window right now. Worked on the Minuteman missile program, and the systems are just rusting in their silos. All that money went down there. And we don't get anything back for it, except a big rusted hole in the ground. And I know we've got a caller on the line, but I'm going to hold him into the next segment, because we're coming up on a commercial break here. But here's the bottom line with this push to war in Iran. It doesn't matter if Iran has got a nuclear weapon. They're not going to use it on us, because we still have the world's largest nuclear arsenal and the delivery systems to put those warheads right on target in Tehran. And heads of state are egomaniacs. They have egos the size of their own country. They're not going to let their own country get destroyed, because they live for the day that future generations are going to admire their statues and their pictures on the money. And so if Iran has got a nuclear weapon, they may put it in a museum. They may march it down the street in a parade and say, ooh, look, we're a nuclear power. They will never attack the United States with it, because they know the retaliation would destroy their country, and there's going to be nobody left to admire the statues, and they're not going to do it. So this idea that Iran is some kind of a threat to the United States justifying invasion, it is a crock. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right to the phones. Drew in California. Aloha, Drew. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today? Is Drew there? Yes.
Comment before I get into my topic here, but your message the other day about the making the politicians dress like NASCAR drivers.
Yes.
Good campaign tool. I would suggest clown costumes once they're actually in office. since they seem to forget their position and get this mindset that they're, you know, these minor gods, might as well remind everybody exactly what their position is.
Well, I like the idea because, I mean, for all the money they take from us, let us at least get some entertainment value out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, really. It seems the last couple of weeks I've been hearing a lot of mention of Tom Clancy, and I had kind of an interesting point here. I know you brought up around the time of the Super Bowl, Sum of All Fears. If you haven't read that book, or if anybody remembers, the bomb that he wrote about in that book was actually built from a missile that fell off an Israeli warplane during the Six-Day War.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, he even wrote about it in the book, that it was material that they stole from the Savannah River plant.
Yes.
He talked about that openly. I remember seeing that
it's kind of a known secret, and if you're my AGE, you'll remember back when there was this big thing in the TV news about how Savannah River had this huge unaccounted for material, and they're saying where did it go, and then like 2 days later they said, oh well, it's probably just stuck inside the piping someplace, and there's no need to worry, go on about your business. And I think it was pretty obvious at that point that there was a huge cover up going on. There was also apparently a nuclear reprocessing plant in New York that was being run by an Israeli gentleman, and there were some bookkeeping errors there, and he fled back to Israel, and that was kind of the end of that. But it's kind of an open secret that Israel built their first few nuclear weapons with fissionables they got from the United States, and it was only later that they built that weapons factory underneath the Dimona reactor that Mordecai Vanunu took pictures of and basically leaked to the rest of the world.
And of course, you know, it seems like I know your opinion on Tom Clancy, as he writes about them as we wish they are, not as we know they are.
Yeah.
But, if nothing else, I mean, they're great storylines. I would suggest even if you remember the Rainbow Six novel, it was about environmentalists trying to kill off the planet to get rid of all the nasty people.
Yes, I remember that one.
Or, you know, you mentioned Dead of Honor, where it was the Japan Airlines pilot crashed into the Capitol and literally decapitated the federal government.
Well, I think his earlier books I liked his earlier books better because they seemed a little bit more grounded in real world. In fact, I very often have gone back to Red Storm Rising as being a very much a model of what we're seeing going on in the United States, with the United States being the antagonist here, in that we've crashed our economy, we don't have enough oil, so we're going to come up with this fake attack on our own city in order to justify invading the Middle East oil fields, which is exactly what happened. And I called the article that I wrote on that Red, White, and Blue Storm Rising, and I will make a point of relinking it to the website once the show is over. But yeah, his strategy, because he got so much of this stuff out of wargaming organizations, his strategies really were very, very accurate. And as I said, and I like reading his books, don't get me wrong, I enjoy his books. The only problem I have with him is that he writes about the CIA as we wish it was, not as we know they really are. And, you know, he does go along with this thing about Muslims are always bad and we're always good. We know that's not real world either, but they are enjoyable books, but they are fiction.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah. Had a kind of good laugh in the other day talking about the, all these people just coming up with these idiotic solutions, you know, New York wanting to tax paper tax returns and all these solutions that are being come up with that we know don't work, that they've been ramming their head into the wall repeatedly on. Kind of brings me to the first Men in Black movie, when they diverted all those military officers for their quote-unquote eye test. What was it that the guy said? Congratulations, gentlemen, you're everything we expected from
years of government training. Yeah, that was a very, very funny movie. And, you know, very, very much tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, it's if you get to hang around with some of these military personnel, very few of them can break free of that training and sort of really become their own people again. It's indoctrination. The whole point of military boot camp training is to destroy your own identity and then rebuild it up into a form that serves the state. And some people survive it, some people don't.
And even so, I mean, my own boss is a former Marine, active National Guard, and you know, it's a lifetime of of BS and indoctrination.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And, you know, we're finding out now more and more that people on military bases and camps, they're being blocked off from the alternative media. They're not able to access websites like mine or hear this radio show. We're even finding out now that those people who know we're out here can't even send email to us anymore. It's being blocked off. They're walling off. There's the military people, and then there's the rest of us bill payers out here, and they're starting to put the walls up. You know, just like they have in Israel, there's a big wall that's going up between the trusted people in the military and the rest of us out here who basically considered troublemakers tolerable only as long as we pay the bills. Drew, we're going to let you go here. Thanks an awful lot here. And we're going to switch over real quick to Julie in Georgia. Aloha, Julie. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. What can we do for you?
I was calling in. Just wanted to... am I on the air?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, my gosh. I wanted to maybe discuss about the Humane Society, of what, you know, they're doing to dog breeders. I don't know if y'all are familiar with what's going on in Indiana and Illinois and Oklahoma.
Well, enlighten me.
Well, you know, they've got claims that in the legislation, you know, to try to regulate breeders. And basically just trying to take breeders' rights away.
Okay. I think maybe you've called the wrong show, because this is not an issue that we've dealt with before, and I'm not even sure, you know, that I want to get into what rights of breeders, because already the possible dirty jokes are beginning to really manifest before me. So, Julie, thanks a lot for the call, but I'm going to let you go here, because we're running out of time on this segment, and I really do have to get some other stories. So thanks an awful lot here. We were talking about various... Okay, let's get to some short news stories, because we're almost done here. This seems to be a day when a lot of people who have done some very bad things are getting a get-out-of-jail-free card. The former Republican National Committee director, who was convicted in a conspiracy to jam Democratic phone lines in New Hampshire in 2002, has... Basically, the judge let him walk. Charges could not be brought. They let him go. He got off scot-free. This is a guy who subverted the election process in New Hampshire in 2002, and he gets a free pass. Turning to the AIPAC spy case, apparently there is a new ruling by the judge in the case that is going to allow a classification expert to testify for the defense without fear of repercussion or penalty. And basically what the defense for these two accused spies from AIPAC, Stephen Rosen and Keith Wasserman, what they're going to say is, well, the information they got shouldn't have been classified in the first place. Therefore, they weren't really trafficking in this classified information. Therefore, they should be released. And this is almost a classic case of, they get caught breaking the rules, let's change the rules after the fact so they get off scot-free. Now, when we come back, I'm going to tell you what the real inside dirt on this AIPAC spy case is, because it's got nothing to do with information, classified or otherwise, that went from the U.S. to Israel. It's what came back that is the real scandal and why they want this case to go away. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And we were talking about the AIPAC spy case and the possibility that the two accused spies are going to basically be given a free walk. They're gonna walk away from the charges. The defense is going to claim that the classified information that they were forwarding on to Israel probably shouldn't have been classified in the first place. Therefore, it wasn't really a crime, blah, 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 blah. Now, all of this is obfuscating the real scandal involved here, because what AIPAC and Stephen Rosen and Keith Wasserman and that whole thing indicated, there was a pipeline, a conduit, if you will, of information flow that went from Larry Franklin, who was the actual agent in place inside the Pentagon Office of Special Plans. Now, this was the special office set up by the Bush administration to coordinate information on Iraq leading to the war. It bypassed all of the other intelligence agencies' checks and balances for the verification and validation of data. And so this office was basically the focal point of the propaganda war to lead us into the real war in Iraq. Larry Franklin was in there. He was taking information, giving it to Rosen and Weissman, who would take it back through AIPAC. They would then meet with Israel's representatives in the United States, who would then send the information back to Israel, either through direct communication channels or in the diplomatic pouch. But that's only one way. And when you set up a conduit, usually there's information traveling in both directions, because both sides have to be getting something out of this arrangement. We know that a great deal of the information that came out of that Pentagon Office of Special Plans was fake, was forgery, was outright lies. The claims about the mobile biological weapons labs that turned out to be British-made balloon inflating systems. The documents supporting the claim that Iraq was buying uranium from Niger. Those turned out to be forgeries, apparently routed through Italian intelligence, and the Italian parliament, when they investigated, they named Michael Ledeen as one of the forgers. So this information was all coming in to help trick us into a war in Iraq. And a lot of this information came through AIPAC from Israel. So that's the real scandal. Israel was feeding information. They were getting it past all the normal U.S. intelligence checks and balances and just mainlining it right into the Office of Special Plans, from which it went right to the White House and right into the White House's press releases and policy papers to say, yes, Iraq has got nuclear bombs and biological weapons, and if we don't attack and kill them all, we're all going to be dead in 45 minutes. We all remember the hype. We all remember the lies. And it's important to remember that we were lied into that war. Because Obama, or maybe I should call him Obushma, is trying to do exactly the same thing. They're waving nuclear horror at us to try and build support for a war in Iran. They're desperate for the war. They can't think of anything else to do to try and maintain control over the United States. The economy is a mess. The American people are angry. And the conventional wisdom is, well, we got out of the last two, you know, we got out of two other really bad depressions by getting into world wars. Let's do it again, you know, keep on doing it as long as it works. And so we're in a very dangerous situation right now where Israel certainly wants Iran to be attacked. And with Netanyahu, who, by the way, lost the election, but somehow he's still winding up the prime minister. He is, you know, slightly to the right of Attila the Hun, and he wants a new war in Iran. Barack Obama is coming out today saying, yes, we can't wait. We've got to go make war on Iran. They're desperate for a war in Iran for a wide variety of reasons. And we have to wonder, what are they going to do to get it? Because right now, the American people, we've had our fill of war. We've had it. We don't want any more wars. We're tired of seeing our kids come home in those cheap metal boxes with those cheap made in China flags draped all over them. Our economy is in a total shambles, in large part because of the trillions of dollars spent on war, including trillions they just misplaced. We don't even know where it went. Remember the big news story of September 10th, 2001? It was Donald Rumsfeld getting up in front of the Pentagon press conference and saying, well, we've misplaced $2.3 trillion, with a T, dollars. We don't know where it was. It was here just a minute ago. Should have been the financial scandal of the century. But 24 hours later, 9/11 happened. The media forgot about the missing $2.3 trillion. And in an amazing coincidence not to be believed, the jet aircraft that crashed into the Pentagon, and it circled around the Pentagon to come in from the other side, it hit the offices where the auditors were trying to find just where that $2.3 trillion had gone to. And that was the end of the search for the missing money, because all the paperwork went up in flames, all the auditors went up in flames. What an amazing coincidence that something like that would happen. So that money is gone. And, you know, we're talking trillion here and trillion there and all the rest of it. The numbers are so large, people can't even grasp them anymore. And somebody ran an ad today that made a point, and I'm going to repeat it here on the radio, and I don't know who ran the ad because I got this information secondhand, but I checked it with my calculator. If on the day that Jesus was born, you started spending $1 million every single day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, $1 million every day, and you started that when Jesus was born up to the present time, you still will not have spent as much money as Barack Obama just spent on his stimulus package. And he's expecting that somehow you will all pay that all back somewhere down the road. That's what all of these bailouts are. We're taking money from the American people and we're pouring it on top of the economy so that they can have bonuses and airplanes and $2,000 a night call girls charged to their business credit cards. And what Barack Obama and our government don't seem to understand, or maybe they just don't care because they're in that final stage of the fall of the empire and they're looting the nation and putting it in their own pockets. The working class of any nation is the foundation on which the economy rests, because labor has to precede capital. And the reason we're in an economic mess right now is because our government gave tax credits to corporations to make it easier to take high-paying manufacturing American jobs and send them to other countries. The media is trying to say it's all the fault of those reckless home buyers and all those people who got too deeply into debt and couldn't deal with it. They bought houses they couldn't afford. Well, when they bought the houses, they could afford them. They had good-paying jobs, and they were making their mortgage payments, and they were making their credit card payments, and they were paying their car loans. And everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, the jobs started going away. And people who'd been making $70,000, $80,000 a year, they're having to take jobs making $50,000 a year. And all of a sudden, mortgage payments are getting missed. And credit card payments are getting missed. And car payments are getting missed. And our wonderful experts, the best and the brightest in Washington, D.C., are scratching their heads saying, wow, what's going on out there? You know, these tax credits, they made our corporate donors happy as all get out. And they said it was going to be wonderful because everything would be more profitable. And for a while it was. For those first few companies that did it, it was you know, windfall profits, huge amounts of money when they offshored their labor. And then everybody starts doing it. And the entire population is missing mortgage payments and credit card payments. And they can't go out and buy new stuff, which we have had these terrible Christmas seasons several in a row. Because somewhere along the way, our government and our corporate culture forgot that your employees are also your customers. And when you cut the legs out from your own employees, when you drive them into lower paying jobs to improve your immediate profitability, that means your customer base is also going away. Why they couldn't see that, I don't understand. I'm still trying to decide if Alex Jones is right and this is a deliberate takedown of our economy, or if it's just greed and stupidity and short-sightedness and really just people, the collective effect of everybody thinking in terms of their own bottom line and their own pocketbook and just not giving a darn what was happening to anybody else around them. Either will produce the same end result. We're heading for a horrendous crash, and our government's only solution, the only thing they can think of doing, is to kick off a major war and kill millions of people because they want to hang on to power and they can't think of any other way to do it because they know the American people. We're fed up. We're out of money. We're out of patience. And we're angry. And, okay, that's the end of our show here. We'll be back tomorrow morning with our Saturday show, 2 hours, phone calls. Please be ready to call in. We'll have more news. Until then, stay safe, be well, enjoy your Pauhana Friday, and Aloha America.